Hey, everyone. How are you doing? Today, another webinar with the crew over at Web Insights. If you want to check them out, webinsights.com. Really appreciate their support of our ongoing webinar series. And we have another group of awesome guests on the show to talk about how do we need to make B2B marketing customer-centric. From my perspective, I wonder why we even have to talk about this topic. Still, seriously, be customer centric. Stop it. Stop the madness. So we have four guests on the show. We'll bring them on here and everybody can introduce themselves, please, just for a few seconds. First up, we have Brian Hansford. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Christoph. I'm really glad to be here. Brian Hansford, I'm Senior Director of Demand Generation with Icertis. Icertis is the leader in contract lifecycle management solutions. We help organizations manage their businesses through the management of contracts to help organizations with how they manage static documents, driving all of the value and commitments from contracts to make sure that they are getting everything that they can out of those documents and agreements. We have customers like Boeing, Microsoft, Daimler, Apple, and others that are some of our clients. And I'm really excited to be here and talk with the rest of you here.
And Brian, you're located on the West Coast. I'm near Chicago, roughly. But we're going around the world. Giuseppe, you're in the UK, right?
Correct. I'm in London. Thank you, Christoph.
Tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm Senior Director of Marketing at Rock Content. Rock Content is a global company that produces marketing solutions for building content experiences across the full buyer journey. In addition, I teach at marketing branding at General Assembly and sometime also at local universities here in London. I'm Italian, as you can probably understand from my southern accent. And as I mentioned before, I live in London. I moved to London 7 years ago.
Fantastic. Welcome to the show. Really appreciate you making the time. And we are keep going around the world back to the US, I believe. Sarah, are you on the East Coast?
I am. I'm just outside of the Baltimore area, sort of like you, Baltimore-ish area.
Baltimore-ish. Like how I say I'm outside Chicago when I'm
yes, 4 hours exactly. away. I'm only 45, so it's not quite
45 minutes. Awesome. Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, I am on the Yahoo marketing team. On Yahoo, we sort of have two business groups. We have the consumer group, where you think of Yahoo Finance, Yahoo Sports, and Fantasy. And then I'm on the B2B side, so our business group that supports ad tech and ad monetization. And within that, I sit under our partnership, industry, and engagement. So I sort of have a deep legacy in event experiential. And that's why a customer-centric approach is near and dear to my heart.
That is awesome to hear. And welcome back, Martin Boyle. Martin has been on the show many, many times. I don't know how many times, a handful of times. And tell us about yourself.
Yeah, thanks very much, Christoph. So I'm the marketing director here at Web Insights. What we do is we capture more demand from your website. So basically, we can identify anonymous website visitors and then put that information, route that information into your existing tech stack. So then you've got a brand new source of first party data that you can use, or your sales, marketing, customer success teams can use. So yeah, that's Web Insights. That's what I do there.
Fantastic. So we got a bunch of questions, of course, we want to run through. And talk about, you know, why is this still a topic we need to talk about? I'm with you. You know, we need to be customer-centric and truly customer-centric. Sarah, let's start with you on the first question. Everybody, you please chime in when Sarah is done. You know, let's have a conversation. I mean, we have enough boring webinars. This is not one of them, right? Are we in agreement? Fist bump, everybody. Let's go, right? Let's go. All right, Sarah, get us going here. Why is a customer-centric marketing strategy, why is that even important?
Yeah, I mean, I think you really brought up the point that how are we not already doing this? It should be something that we're thinking about and something we think about on my marketing team every step of the way. Like it's first identifying, you know, what do consumers want and what are their needs and how do we meet them there? And the best example I could think of that how we approached this in the last 18 months was during the pandemic when live events stopped, when it felt like the world had stopped and we had to pivot to virtual. But when we thought about where customers were, like for me, our customers are in advertising, brand marketing and agencies. And I myself was worried about my job security. I had friends in New York that were losing their jobs, worried about losing their jobs, asking to be taking pay cuts. And we thought about everyone being isolated, everyone's at home, and how do you think about where we can meet customers where they were? And we did a brainstorm with three of us, and we came up with a project called the Happiness Network. And it was sort of addressing the need for people to get back together, to do something fun, to bring a little bit of like spark imagination, to break up the day of just being virtual. And what we did is we took sort of like a two-pronged approach. We looked at our audiences. We sort of thought about how we could engage with our loyal customers, our most high-value accounts. And we created a program called Behind the Scenes, where we brought them celebrity talent. And it was the 45-minute experience with Sheryl Crow doing a concert, talking about sort of her journey. Similarly, we did the same thing with Ludacris and Magic Johnson. And then we found a huge success with that in terms of the opportunity for our sales team to engage with clients, to talk about those conversations afterwards and have it be something different than sort of like, what's going on with you? Just a different approach to business. And then we did a sort of a step down where we thought about who are our day-to-day contacts and how do we bring something similar to them? And we did another program where it ran for 3 weeks and it was four different experiences. They took sort of like a fun BuzzFeed style quiz and got put into a neighborhood when you couldn't go out into your neighborhoods anymore. You couldn't experience that. You were nervous to just even go out and get coffee at that point. And we worked with a bunch of talent to create 12 different kind of fun experiences. We had the free solo climber, Alex Hanad, come on and talk about sort of adventure. We did a cake making experience with Flower Shop, who does the exploding, really brightly filled cakes. And we just sort of thought, and we had great engagement. It was overwhelmingly positive and sort of that's kind of like how I think of how ways that we've approached it and why it's important always and especially in this past year.
Giuseppe, how about you? You want to take the jump on that?
Yes, thank you, Christoph. I must admit, you know, when I hear about customer centricity or audience centricity, like probably you are, I usually get a bit confused. You know, isn't marketing and the whole enterprise supposed to focus on customers by definition? How could it not be customer centric? But then, you know, we live our daily life and we discover that there are so many examples of not customer centricity. Just to give an example, a few weeks ago, I sent an email with some request to my pension provider here in the UK. And I got an answer after 10 working days. And even if they implemented what I requested, I never got, you know, some kind of final confirmation that that was implemented. I just discovered that by chance a few days ago. So and there are so many examples around. So maybe we should go back one step. And I love what Sarah already mentioned about all the customer-centric activities that they're running. But what exactly is customer centricity? You know, how can we define that? And in my view, we can define it as doing business that fosters some kind of positive customer experience across the full buyer journey. So it's, and I think Sarah already mentioned the journey, right? That's really the key point, understanding the customer journey and learning about your audience before you even create any kind of experience for them, before you create any kind of content for them. One of the things we have done internally at Rock Content is, learning more about our customers. And one more time, this may seem trivial, but it's not, especially for us marketers. And for a few months, we have been listening to all recorded calls from sales and prospects, from sales and customers, to better understand, you know, their needs and their requests and what they're expecting from us and so on and so forth. One more time, it is probably basic stuff, but if you don't start with, you know, this basic approach, then how can we even think about doing marketing for someone who we, you know, even don't know who they are? So that's really, you know, my first comment about customer centricity or audience centricity. It is a very deep understanding of your customers across the full buyer journey. So it's not necessarily about marketing, it's the full enterprise. But of course, I mean, we are marketers, we are talking about marketing today. So let's start from there.
Absolutely. And, you know, Brian, before we come to you, the one thing that crossed my mind as you were talking, Giuseppe, is when Sarah is talking about how the audience, how the customer base reacts, right? So that's a good indication. I mean, if everybody is engaged, you know, maybe you're on the right track to be customer centric. And if nobody responds, maybe you're not, right? Maybe you picked the wrong thing. Or, and that's, I think, the, when I grew up in marketing, right, we're set in stone. This is what we do today. And we're going to do that for the next, now I'm showing how old I am. But today we change things, right? Like you just change it, like move forward, next play. With the next play, Brian, run it.
Yeah, so I like to fall back on one of my all-time favorite quotes that I borrow heavily from Anne Handley. And I think that we have to have pathological empathy for our buyers in B2B marketing. It's one of the things that we all as B2B marketers fall back on. We love to talk about ourselves. We love to talk about our companies. We love to talk about our products and features and how great we are. But we don't always keep that focus on who we're actually trying to have a conversation with and the meaningful experience that we're trying to provide to help people. First off, you know, help them understand whether or not they have a problem to solve. What is the problem? What's the scope of the problem? How do they approach solving that? And then what are the solutions that they need to solve that? We, you know, I think just in general, and I see this all over the place. And when I was doing consulting with a lot of organizations, it's like, you know, it's just blasting interrupt marketing, just talking about messages that really aren't relevant to the people that you're trying to engage with. And you're not addressing or haven't been addressing problems that they're trying to solve. So I think it's trying to flip that around and be much more empathetic. And I think in B2B marketing, there's a problem. We talk about personas, we talk about enterprises, we talk about industries, but we never talk about the people that we're trying to engage with. I think the closest we get a lot of times is persona. Then we get down to title and maybe what they're doing. And that's a big problem because in B2B marketing, I think the average, at least in enterprise, the average buying committee is around 6 to 8 people that are involved in a purchase decision for a complex enterprise solution. And, you know, that takes 9 to 18 months. So you have a lot of people that you're trying to engage with and provide valuable information with to help them make a decision that isn't confusing, that doesn't slow things down. So I think, you know, there's already enough challenges out there. Don't put more barriers up there to create more challenges. So just being centric and having that, you know, the pathological empathy so that you can engage with people, get their attention, and demonstrate that you have a level of understanding of the problems that they may be trying to solve. And then I think the other challenge too is, you know, I've read about this where I think so many of us are very responsive. You know, somebody downloads a white paper and boom, the ISR is calling him within 5 minutes, right? responsiveness, I don't think is a problem, but I think it's being a little more prescriptive on how we're trying to engage with people to help say, listen, let me help or help me understand some of the challenges you have. Let's see if there might be a connection here. And this is how we would approach solving the problem. Does that make sense to you? And there's a way to apply marketing with that approach to help with that and have that customer centricity.
And I think at the end of the day, we always have to remember, right? We're still talking to people. It drives me crazy when people tell me B2B is so different. It's still people. It's just
I have yet to see a brick building cut a PO. So, you know, if anybody ever sees buildings cut POs, let me know. But otherwise, it's people that are making those decisions. The people are the ones that we have to talk to. And I think that's what we need to think about. And, you know, and just not talking about ourselves so much, you know, let's listen a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. Share relevant content. Martin, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely echo what's just been said. I've got both a business-to-business and a business-to-consumer background, and everyone says, oh, you know, B2C, selling to people. Yeah, B2B, obviously, selling to people too. Just people making purchase decisions on behalf of their companies. So I think everything is moving towards that more consumerization of B2B marketing. It's definitely changed the way that people are marketing. ABM is a key strategy now. You know, how can you really understand the buyer? Where there's a complex buying process, somebody referenced that, with lots of stakeholders. If you can speak to one contact in the company and they become your advocate internally, that's great. Ideally, you need a few different contacts, you know, in different departments, depending on what it is you're marketing. So when the conversation happens, as they do in B2B, you get, you know, oh, I've heard of them, rather than who, about what, yeah, that kind of thing. So someone else mentioned the personas. I think that, you know, it does come back to that to a degree, but I think it's, you know, the personal touch is very important. Super jealous of your budget, Sarah, Cheryl Crowley, Chris and Magic Johnson. I think to say kind of why is it important, it's just absolutely fundamental. It's from a marketing perspective, what's the impression that you want to give and what's the impression you want to make on a prospect as a business? The approach has to be rooted in that for marketing. But I think Giuseppe kind of touched on this one as well, that it actually stems from being a customer-centric business and having that culture embedded.
I was just going to say,
please go ahead, Sarah.
I was just going to say, building off of what you guys said too, about like listening and empathy, like we've found tremendous success too in forming advisory councils. Like, so expanding it just beyond like one or two, but bringing like a group of like our, you know, customers that we trust and leveraging their insights. Like, what do you want to hear from us? Vetting our go-to-market strategies with them, bringing in our product teams to like hear what it is you actually need us to build to solve your business problem in the future. And I feel like that's been tremendously helpful for us too, in terms of sort of like identifying strategies going forward, not only on the marketing side, but on the business side and the product side too.
Just to rephrase what Martin said, I was thinking about a couple of elements that in my opinion are bringing us B2B marketers to be more, well, let's say again, customer centric. The first is education. I think we are more educated today. We understand as B2B marketers the strong difference between, you know, short-term marketing and long-term marketing. So activation on one side, branding on the other side. And why this is important, because I think we had a super strong focus on lead gen until a few years ago, which makes sense, and it's part of our activity, right? But it's a very rational and logic approach. It's not involving any kind of emotion. Today, we better understand this difference. And I think this is also coming to the convergence between B2B and B2C, right? That's something that B2C has understood since ever. And now this is coming also to B2B enterprises. And I see examples of emotional content, emotional videos, emotional campaigns, some of them provoking, some others not. But, you know, I see humor, I see having fun as a typical approach of some B2B enterprises, which probably didn't even think about this kind of content approach until a few years ago. And the second element is COVID, in my opinion. COVID has transformed the way we see things. We have been trying to be closer to our clients probably in the last 18 months. Also, many of us understood that going only with short term just didn't make any sense. We added that branding, that emotional element to our content and to our customer experiences. So I think these two elements are bringing us closer to the, I don't want, again, to make the difference between B2B and B2C, but this convergence is happening. And this is very visible today after 18 months of pandemic.
You know, the pandemic has really moved some of those things forward. I mean, I used to do live streams like this in person, and I haven't done one in person in, I don't know, it seems like 10 years now, you know, but certainly a while. And when people say, oh, you want to do this in person? I'm like, but then I have to like go over there, you know, set up, everything is set up already, and people still watch. It doesn't have any impact on anything, right? Other than you get to meet the person in person. All right, Brian, I think we already touched this a little bit here and there, embedded in different answers, but how do we create that good customer experience? I mean, I heard Sarah, I'm excited to hear that you've had success with committees or groups, and I've had two in some instances, but I've also had some horrible experiences, and maybe that's many, many years ago now, where, you know, they just slowed things down. So they can work if you do them well. What else, Brian? Kick us off on this one. What else can we do to implement this good customer experience strategy?
Yeah, so I think one of the big challenges with the customer experience is in developing one, especially if you're trying to help develop a funnel and a pipeline. One of the things I see quite often is organizations like to take a perspective that's totally internal. So we want this person to do this. And then when they come here, that's going to go to sales and the ISR is going to follow up. And then it's going to go over here and then it's go down here. And then we're going to measure it this way. The perspective, I think, is important because if we don't ask some of our either existing customers or even prospective customers how they are going to approach an evaluation, consideration, their research, what helps them, what do they find most valuable, we're just guessing. And then if we also don't ask, we're not getting the right perspective. We're just taking our perspective on what we think should happen, or what we think, maybe even just what one customer is saying. And that's not a full enough view. So I think one of the most important things to do is to really have some conversations and ask people what they're doing, and how they do it, how they're trying to solve problems. And it's amazing when you ask questions. I think there's a saying, what is it? Interested is interesting. If you start asking questions and listening, and if you're not talking as much and you're letting your audience do more of the talking, the lessons that come out of that are incredible. And then you can start shaping some of the experiences and understanding some of the questions and the problems that people have and the problems that they're trying to solve. And then where do you provide the channels that they can have those experiences to learn more? So, you know, there's a paper I was just reading from Gartner, I think it came out last August, where they're saying that only 17% of a complex purchase decision is spent with any sales organization at all, so any reps. And only 5% is spent with a single individual rep. So that means that there is a vast amount of decision-making, consideration, research that's going on before anybody even talks to another person. So it's important to, you know, make sure that your website is structured in a way that's providing information that's relevant, that the thought leadership content that you're providing is meaningful, that referral sites, research sites have good reviews on there, that help organizations do research when they're just independently checking things out on their own. It's really looking at the full view, not looking in the mirror, but kind of lifting your head up and looking out a little bit, asking questions and listening and just trying to understand, okay, what are the problems you're trying to solve? How are you approaching this? What is most helpful for you, and how can you deliver that information and those tools and those resources and that engagement in a way that's meaningful and doesn't get in the way and it doesn't slow things down?
So much to comment on. I'm going to withhold most of my comments, but so much good stuff right there, Brian, and we'll throw it over to one of the other panelists. But the one thing I do want to mention, when it comes to listening is so hard. It's actually harder than it sounds, right? And this was brought home to me the other day. Nick Graham at Mondelez International was on Real Talk, the Customer Insights show, and he said, you know that quote everybody throws around, how you couldn't ask, Henry Ford couldn't ask people what they wanted because they would have said faster horses, and how that doesn't help you innovate. He said, that's total baloney. Oh, he didn't say, that's my word. He didn't say baloney. Total baloney, because there's totally an inside in that quote. They told you they wanted to go faster. Of course they don't know the answer is a car. Do you know what I mean? So that comes back to truly listening, not listening to the exact words, but listening to their intent. So anyway, that's my only comment on that, but great stuff. Sarah, what are your thoughts on the question?
Yeah, no, to build on sort of what Brian said and give like an example and sort of our approach, like when we first, the pandemic shut down, we had to think through like how we were going to get our markets out in message. We sort of came up with this concept of doing thought leadership pieces, keeping them 10 minutes, talking about, you know, things that were important to us at the time, digital out of home, CTV, or some of those. But we found that when we were seeing what the engagement was, it was really low. And that's because that's how we were thinking about it and not listening to what our customers actually needed to get from us. And we pivoted, took a different approach, and started going back to like the format of webinars, where you're actually in the tool with hands-on keyboard folks. And we've seen tremendous amount of like growth and success in pivoting that approach, listening to like what they actually want to hear versus trying to like tell them. Mm-hmm. Our approach.
Giuseppe or Martin, anything else on this one?
Yeah, I think if I may add a comment on what Sarah is saying, one of the problems we as a marketers have is, I mean, we love jumping immediately on execution, right? Mm-hmm. Communication, execution, and of course, I mean, social media probably are the best channels today for executing our stuff. But we often forget that, you know, whenever we put a content plan or a marketing plan together, there are three different phases. And the first is diagnosis. And the second one is building your strategy based on the diagnosis. And finally, you jump on execution. And we tend to forget the first two phases. And understanding your audience is exactly part of the diagnosis, together, you know, with the understanding the context, eventually your competition, and so on and so forth. So I really love what Sarah and Brian were saying, because, I mean, those are two different ways to understand your audience, the advisory boards, for instance, or just asking questions. Another exercise I usually tend to do whenever I build a strategy before jumping on execution is what I call the exercise of unanswered questions. And this is something that I've done also consulting large enterprises. I usually invite around the table all customer facing departments, so people who really understand their audience, and I ask them, all right, let's start to put down on a wall with post-it, that was a pre-COVID era, all the unanswered questions that in your opinion your potential buyers may have. And the outcome of this exercise is a wall full of post-it that then we try to categorize. And this is really the starting point of a content editorial plan, for instance, because, I mean, let's remember that those pains, those questions, those unanswered questions are nothing else than the final point. But then we have to create content that answer those questions or content that solve those pains. So the combination of several ways, again, interviews, the advisory board, and simple exercises like the one I ran with the, all my clients are probably some of the best ways, you know, to combine, to put all these things together and to better understand your audience before you jump on execution and communication.
I mean, I'm the first to admit, I always like to just, let's just go. And some of that we do need, quite frankly, at times, but you do have to keep those other things in mind before you get started. And even once you get started, you know, kind of keep reiterating as you move forward. Martin, anything else from your end?
Yeah, just a couple of things. I mean, there's the classic stuff that people have mentioned, you know, get close to your customers, listen to calls. Are your customers using your product or service in a way that is new to you and isn't in your marketing collateral? That's a good one. We also use, you know, NPS surveys, Net Promoter Score surveys, and that feedback gives us insight into what our ideal customer actually is. And then we kind of go full circle. We look to work with businesses that we know our product is a really good fit for, and it's going to bring them success. Just another one from kind of from my B2C kind of background. There's lots and lots of talk about reducing friction, having frictionless experiences. You don't really hear that quite so much in B2B from my experience. It's kind of like, you know, they want the ebook, they're going to have to fill out the form, that kind of thing. So I would say look for ways to reduce friction wherever possible. So just a practical example. And so on the ebook example, if you remove gates from your content, but you need to know who's been viewing your books, this is my little plug here. Web Insights can help you. It can tell you which businesses, and based on browsing behavior, we can tell you which contacts are most likely to have viewed. So it's just little things like that, where it's taking the pain away in a marketing in a marketing sense. So yeah, I think reduce friction, but I mean, there's plenty of other ways that you can reduce friction for your prospects and customers.
Yep. I mean, friction is just a pain. And the one thing that I was waiting for you to say, Martin, how the customer, how the user is not using your product correctly, but you didn't say it. Thank you. What you said is a way that's new to you. So any software company listening, that's the way to phrase that. That's how you learn. That's how you listen. That's super customer centric to say it like that, because I hear all kinds of people say, they're not using my product correctly. Well, maybe you didn't design it correctly, seriously. So that is customer centric language. Now, we got that out of the way, but how do we keep going? You know, this is one thing too in content strategy, right? It's a marathon. Yes, we might be sprinting today, we might be sprinting tomorrow, but a customer-centric experience, it's ongoing, right? I mean, we have to maintain it. We can't just have a strategy session today and then next year we're just talking about other stuff. Giuseppe, maybe get us started on this one. How do we keep going? How do we maintain it? How do we make sure it's top of mind amongst all those other things that are top of mind?
Well, I think you should find a way to operationalize this customer centricity inside your marketing department or enterprise. And in addition, you should probably follow a series of steps. Diagnosis is the first one. We already mentioned that several times. Understanding your audience, but also don't just focus on short-term marketing. I mean, we all know, again, that lead gen is critical, but it drives marketing tactics that no one likes. In addition, hire for customer orientation, secure that, you know, your next hires are strongly focused on customer, understand customer centricity. And something that I really like, and I think several companies are doing it right, Adobe, for instance, is one of them, is democratizing in some way customer insights. So making those customer insights available. There are customer facing departments, there are other departments that are not so exposed to customer insights, but find a way to make them public inside your company. So all these steps, I think, are critical from, again, the diagnosis side up to making this operational and continuous in your company. And they definitely help keeping and maintaining this kind of customer centricity inside the marketing department. And one more time, it's not just about marketing. So it should be extended to the full company, the full enterprise.
You're mute there, Christoph, I think.
Yeah, I just noticed that. Happens every time. I don't know why. And so there's so many channels now to communicate all this information, right? Don't email me. And what I was saying when I was muted is you guys can email me, but you know, there's just too much email, right? But you could have a Slack channel, you share customer insights. You could have an internal podcast, share that every few weeks, you know, something. But you have to get that information in front of people so people understand what are customers saying, what are customers feeling, what are they thinking, what's their behaviors. Brian, what have you seen that works to keep that customer-centric experience going and maintain it?
Yeah, one of the things that we did, it was actually my company before Icertis, it was right after COVID. We didn't have anywhere near the budget that Sarah had, so we couldn't get Ludacris or Magic Johnson or any of those guys. But one of the things that we did was the company I was with was a security and privacy software provider, and the community of security, IT security and privacy people, professionals, is very passionate and tight-knit, and we created it was right after COVID happened, and events started getting canceled. Everybody went through this experience, so we thought, okay, what's our alternative here? Well, instead of having tons of webinars, which we did, but in addition to that, we actually set up a forum. It was a monthly forum, and we called it group therapy. And what it was, we had the monthly sessions hosted by some recognized thought leaders, either privacy or security professionals. There'd be a topic, and people would just dial in. There was no pitch. And those are the rules that we started with. There was no pitch, but people would join, and they would actually network and talk to each other and share their experiences, share their ideas, share their frustrations. And it turned into kind of a networking session, idea sharing session. And the amazing thing was, it was customers and prospective customers all talking to each other, and you were just kind of standing back, letting the conversation flow. And that type of experience, I think when you start bringing people together so that they can share ideas, share their experiences, share best practices, networking, things like that, especially in these times, I think there's we all have a craving of kind of, even though we like to have some space, there's still that human connection that can be very powerful in that customer marketing experience. And I think if you can create opportunities and channels and methods to establish those connections where you're not just talking to people, but maybe you're listening a little bit more, but also give opportunities for customers, prospective customers, to talk to each other, that can be incredibly powerful. And people will remember if you help facilitated that. They will remember that. And they will, in the back of their mind, they will, you know, give you some emotional credit for that experience. And that's very powerful. And you're just, you know, I think you're getting out of the way at that point. And I think, you know, we're underestimating some of, and maybe not even recognizing some of the experiences there that we could take advantage of. Just to bring people together through all kinds of different channels, just to help them kind of work things out, maybe share some ideas, vent a little bit. And I don't know, those are some ideas there. It's not just about email. It's not just about social media, you know, webinars, things like that. Kind of open it up a little bit to create more of a human connection.
You know, the thing of connecting people, I mean, there's a lot of companies in B2B, believe it or not, on Facebook, that have Facebook groups and people are sharing, you know, I couldn't do this or I couldn't do that. And then somebody says, oh, here's how I did that. And the company listens and sometimes chimes in, but they also get ideas from there, right? Why is this a new way of how people use the product or whatever? So I think that's a fantastic example. Sarah, we have not come to you yet on this question, have we?
I don't think so. I love sort of what Brian was saying. I love what Martin was saying about, and I'm trying to think of a good example of how we've implemented that ourselves too, just to like spark ideas. I love ideas. And I've been writing down your guys's about this unanswered questions forum with internal people. And I love the Facebook group idea. A way I think we've also been sort of approaching it too is instead of just doing our own proprietary content and like events and content that we're sharing is sort of leaning into our partners too in the industry to help formulate questions, whether that's being part of their advisory groups to hear what they're saying. And that sort of helps us evaluate what we should be talking about in market. I think an interesting one that we've done recently is we partnered with Josh Golden, who did a Eureka Moment. And he put together like a 6-series podcast with like the CMO of Facebook and the VP of marketing from Pepsi, talking about sort of their moment in life that's changed their way of thinking. And we sort of spotlighted our executives too, and making it more of a human moment of like, how are we doing brand storytelling? How are those moments changing? And doing stuff in like a really authentic way.
At the end of the day, it is about being human. And I don't know why I have to keep repeating myself saying that everywhere in the world where people are listening to me, because we're all humans, right? Shouldn't be difficult. Martin, what do you say?
So great point about democratizing customer data insights. I completely agree with that. I think how to maintain customer-centric marketing strategy. Again, I think it stems from having a customer-centric culture at your business. Trying to think of a quick example, I suppose. We use we look at negative retention here, so that's obviously growing the services that your existing customers use. To do that, you need happy customers who trust that you can deliver. So a lot hinges on the product and the service that your customers receive. Also, just coming back to what Giuseppe said, I can't remember if it was not to this, if it was the answer to this question or the one before, but the unanswered questions, I think, is really good. I used to work at a business and they used, they called it the Ben Duffy approach, and it was based on an advertising exec. And he basically went into a pitch, he wrote down all the questions that he'd have if he was sat on the other side of the table, and that helped him to win the pitch. So it's just, that's just obviously the classic, put yourself in the customer's shoes. But yeah, I really do like that idea of the unanswered questions. I suppose coming back to the culture, it's try and break down silos where you can, share information, just work cross-functionally as much as possible. That's really going to help you out in your marketing.
Silos are only useful in Iowa, which is where I am. They're not necessarily useful in organizations. Work across, share information, and collaborate together. I mean, it really sounds so simple to say. Sarah, to the last question here of the day, if you can kick us off perhaps, and we shared some of these top tips already. I think you guys are just sharing them, you know, as you're talking, as we're talking about the topic. But what are the top tips for customer-centric marketing? Like, you know, if we had to rank them, what are the number 1 through 3 or 1 through 99? We don't have that much time, but 1 through 3, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's to reiterate a lot of what everybody else has said, but it's listening to your customers, you know, surveying them, getting their feedback. I love like the forum ideas, advisory councils, like just understanding what their needs are, thinking about them first and the problem that you can solve. And then I would say, like from my perspective, in terms of things that's really like testing and learning for us, we've been really playing around a lot with like different models of communicating. And don't be afraid to do that. Try something. If it doesn't work, pivot. Think about how you can change that model, what you would be saying. And sort of, I think those are sort of my big two key takeaways.
Fantastic. Giuseppe, what about you? What are your top top tips?
Well, it's difficult, Christoph, because everything has been already said. But if I may summarize my three tips, well, the first is probably respect. Go with some genuine respect for your clients, which means, just to give you an example, data. We all marketers love data, and that's critical for us, you know, if we want to collect data and then start our sales cycle, right? But let's be conscious about privacy and data and all the problems that we see today and the GDPR regulations and all the other new policies that are coming with different countries. Consumers are not so willing of sharing personal information, and we should be conscious of that. So we should probably incentivize first party customer data collection instead of, you know, just using wider data collection approaches. And this is the first one. So respect more your clients. The second one is, and I think I already mentioned this a few times, blend short and long-term marketing. Short-term for me is activation, which is, again, critical, but go with long-term, which is awareness, top of the funnel. It's more human. It goes with the emotional marketing and the good blend of short and long-term is really what is helping brand growth. And the third one is consider always the full journey. Don't just focus on your marketing side, but remember that, I mean, the customer experience is a full journey experience. So try to collaborate with other departments in order to create this kind of seamless, smooth experience going across the full journey from the very beginning up to the end when they will become your customers.
I mean, I'm absolutely a fan of, you know, not just focusing on the short term, but long term, right? Because if we want to build a company, certainly we need to have our customers come back. And I don't know if you guys read the book, Shep Hyken just put that out, I'll Be Back. And he talks about repeat customers and loyal customers, right? So you're not just coming back, but you're actually, you're a fan. You know, you're talking about it. And I think that's what everybody wants. But you got to create that good customer-centric experience for sure. Brian, how about yours?
I'll try and riff and come up with some new ideas here. I think, you know, in addition to the risk where marketers look internally and like to talk, we'd like to talk about ourselves and our own companies and stuff like that. The other thing that we also like to do is we also like to look at competitors and say, well, our competitor's doing that, so we need to do it too. Well, mm-hmm. Let's flip that around a little bit. Look at what no one else is doing and maybe get a little bit of courage and try something new, experiment a little bit and see if that will resonate with your audience based on, you know, some of the research that you've done to hopefully develop that customer-centric organization, that customer-centric strategy. You know, it's just it's not just marketing. It has to be sales. It has to be customer advocacy, customer marketing, customer support, all of that. So that has to weave into the DNA of the organization. But what are some things that nobody else is doing? And try something new and see if that resonates and test it out. Like Sarah said, you know, try some, give some things, some innovative ideas a shot. You never know. Sometimes things will resonate. And that is that salient moment that will resonate with your audience. And you've just innovated something and you're out there in front, and that can be really exciting. So you have to have some bravery and some courage to try that. So I think that's important. So you'd be able to, you know, have a culture and an organization. Let's try something new. Let's experiment with this and let's test it out. I think that's really important. And when you do that, I think there's a level of respect that comes with that from your audience. Just, you know, if you're not, as long as you're not disrespectful, you know, violating privacy or insulting people or anything else, you know, give it a shot. You know, I think people are pretty forgiving with things like that. And you're not following the herd at that point. You're actually trying to think of some new ideas. So be brave, try some new ideas.
And, you know, depending on what it is, you might be able to integrate it very easily into what you're already doing. I mean, I'm just thinking about live streaming, you know? I mean, there's no more effort on any of our parts to do a webinar or do a webinar and a live stream and a podcast, which is what we're currently doing, right? We're doing everything at once, but there's no extra work involved for any of us, right? Because it just goes through one thing and then it splits off. So think about those ways. How do you kind of tie it into what you're already doing? Martin, bring us home. What are your top tips?
Yep, thanks very much. So couple of practical ones from me. So I'd say use technology in a way that creates bespoke experiences for the prospect wherever you can. When I've been on this previously, I've spoken about Webio. They enable you to create a completely personalized homepage based on the business IP address of the visitor. So obviously that's going to make a really great first impression. Come back to what Giuseppe was saying about data. Sorry about this, slightly shameless plug, but our product can give you a new source of first party data. So if you know a customer has been browsing certain pages of your website and they're looking into a product or service that you know they're not currently using, you can start that conversation with them. You're helping them to buy. There's the old saying, people like to buy and they don't like to be sold to. So, you know, you can maybe give them a bit more detail or reach out with a case study, but you're coming from that informed place. And then my big tip is, as a general thing, is just work cross-functionally across the business, have conversations with the sales team, product team, customer success team, and just advocate for the customer within your business wherever possible, all the time. There you go, that's me.
All the time, fantastic. I mean, it's always great to have experts like you guys on the show and dive into these topics. I hope people take it to heart and actually, you know, put the customer at the heart of everything and be customer centric. I mean, it sounds easier than it could be. I'm out of here, guys. I think I'm the only one that hasn't commented on this. I'm booking Ludacris for my next company meeting or whatever customer meeting. I'm just kidding. But you can do it at any budget. Come on. So let's not fret on that. So anyone watching on the GoToWebinar, there should be a poll available right there if you want to sign up for a demo of Web Insights, the website visitor tracking software. You can do that. Otherwise, go to webinsights.com and you can sign up there as well. Really appreciate you four coming on today and sharing your expertise. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.